Come on.
Welcome to Money Savage, a savage approach to personal finance. This is George Grumbacher, and the time is right. Welcome to today's guest, the strong and powerful Peter Hug. Peter, are you ready to do this?
I am, George. Pleasure to be here.
Excellent. Let's do this. Peter is the director of global trading for Kitco Metals. He has worked in the space since 1974. He's a sought-after expert and frequent speaker on the subject matter as well. I'm excited to have you on. Peter, tell us a little bit about your personal life, some more about your work, and why it is you do what you do.
Well, it happened by accident, as most things do in life. I came out of university in 73, out of the University of Toronto, with the aspirations of becoming a teacher. And at that time in Canada, in Ontario, where I grew up in Toronto, Ontario, teaching jobs were non-existent. And a buddy of mine that I worked with in a restaurant as I was paying my way through university was a Swiss-trained banker who couldn't find a job in Canada because he didn't have Canadian experience.
Wow.
Ended up at a foreign exchange company, which at that time was the largest in the world, a company called Deek Pereira. They had offices in 80 countries. And he asked me if I was interested in being a foreign exchange trader. Of course, I had no idea what he was talking about. And I started at Deek Pereira in 73, and it was just a coincidence, but within 6 months, due to people leaving, being fired, I found myself the head trader for the Canadian operation for Deek Pereira for their foreign exchange unit. Then in 76, there was a financial institution that was based in Quebec, Canada, that was worried about the Quebec referendum about leaving Canada. They decided, their board of directors decided it might be appropriate to open up an office outside of the province. They opened up one in Toronto, offered me a job to run their foreign exchange operation and also to add a precious metals component to the service platform. And we were fortunate enough to have a fairly sophisticated precious metals program in place prior to the 79-80 bull market in gold that saw gold first touch 850 and silver at $50. And we became, next to Scotia Macata, the second largest wholesale gold dealer in Canada. And that lasted through 92 when the company was sold to a French domiciled bank in Quebec. At that point, I had young kids and didn't want to relocate to Quebec and decided to leave the business in 92. Ended up becoming the CEO of a publicly traded company that introduced microchip identification to pets in North America.
Natural transition.
Yeah, real natural. Then I did that until 2000, still sort of trading precious metals on the side for a couple of my larger wholesale clients. Then I moved to the Bahamas for 3 years, traded precious metals out of the Bahamas. Then I went to New Zealand for a year and a half, traded precious metals for a firm there. And then in 2010, was offered, Kitco called me. The owner of Kitco happened to be, which was unknown to me, was actually a client of ours when I was running the bank's operation. He had grown from, Kitco had grown from 7 employees to 220, and he called me and asked me if I'd be interested in running his precious metals division, and that's where I am today.
A long, strange trip, sir. Or maybe not that strange at all, but I have to imagine that you were certainly, it sounds like you became an absolute expert early on, and expertise is always a sought-after thing, so... I appreciate that very much. So after 44 years, give or take, how would you describe the current state of precious metals?
You know, that's a great question. About 3 years ago, I took a look at, you know, what the differences were in the markets today relative to what they were in 79-80. I mean, the obvious difference was we had no computers. We were still using IBM Selectric typewriters. There was no internet, so the speed of communication was considerably slower than it
right.
is today. Everything was done by a phone call. There was one service provider in the market that offered precious metals quotes, and that was Reuters. So it was, when you compare it to today, obviously very archaic. But the irony of it was when I looked back at 79, 80, and I looked at what's happened to the precious metals market in the last 44 years, it's astounding that very little has changed. The only two new products that are basically on the market today that weren't around back in 79, 80 are the ETFs. And there was a version of an ETF. They were called, they were sort of mutual funds, but, not to the degree that ETFs are traded in today. And there are some esoteric products on the futures markets, like being able to trade ratios, which weren't available back in 79, 80. But pretty much everything else was. I mean, you could, invest in mining stocks, physical bullion, you could trade futures, you could trade options. There were managed accounts. Not a lot has changed in 44 years other than the technology.
Interesting. Yeah, and certainly the technology has changed immensely, which you, obviously you just mentioned that. So something I'm curious about, it seems like a lot of the rules of thumb or some of the rules of thumb in the general stock market, it's harder to trust those the way that maybe that it used to be. And market cycles are stranger. We're obviously in the longest bull run in the history of the market. Do you think that the way that commodities act is still similar or in line with the way that they always have? Is gold still a safe haven, for example?
Well, you use that word. I mean, the problem I have with gold is, I've never been one of these proponents that, have indicated the end of the world is coming and gold is going to go to $20,000 an ounce and the financial system is going to basically go by the wayside and, you need gold to be able to barter for your survival down the road. I've just never been in I know it sounds humorous, but there is a significant percentage of investors, specifically in the U.S., that have that belief and are responsible for buying a pretty sizable percentage of the physical product that's available in the market. But when I look at the markets, what has really changed and created a fundamental difference in the markets today, whether they be the equity markets or the commodity markets, is the speed of a transaction and the fact that it's done by computers. All the guys coming out with MBAs right now, they learn how to create algorithms, and the computer basically just does it on its own. So, if you were trading the gold-silver ratio and it got to a certain point, it doesn't take a manual approach to do the trade. I mean, everything is programmed into the computer. When it happens, it's instantaneously filled. And then depending on the size of the transaction, it could influence the market. So what you have is the mechanics of the market are similar. The reasons why the market moves are similar. But the speed and the volatility of the markets due to computer trading is really what's creating more volatility today than we saw back in the day when it was a more manual process.
Got it. So many of the fundamentals are still the same. It's just a matter of things moving way faster and information is flowing around way just considerably quicker. So
instantaneous. I mean, when an unemployment report comes out at 8:30, literally a millisecond after 8:30, the markets are moving because the computers have picked up the information and they're trading faster than you can push a button. So that's really what's happened. So when you have a news event, could be an unemployment report, could be a Fed meeting, the movement when that news breaks is so quick that manually it's impossible to stay on top of the trade. So you've got to either be positioned in front of the trade and hope you're right on what news is going to break, or you go into the news release flat and then hope you can catch the market after the release.
Got it. So is it fair to say that you think that commodities are, or rather metals are, an efficient marketplace then, with all the available information being in the price?
They are on the futures market and the wholesale market. They're extremely efficient. To the fraction of a penny. I mean, a dealer will figure out if there's a premium for London delivery gold against New York delivery gold. Again, the computer will work out exactly what a shipping cost is, and he'll the computer will tell him whether there's an arbitrage there or not, and instantaneously put on the trade before the trader's even aware that a trade has taken place. So in that context, it keeps the markets honest relative where the price should be in respect to various global markets.
Okay, so there's a lot of folks here in the United States who are fearful and thinking that when the world goes sideways, they're going to actually need physical gold to be able to buy things. Mm-hmm. Do you have a sense of what percentage of the market that really is when people are, I'll refer to that as acting emotionally, how that's impacting the market?
Again, you know, when I looked at the sort of differences from 40-odd years back to today relative to products, I also looked at the psychologies of the investors that I ran into back in, the late 70s and, between the 2008-2011 period and, quite frankly, even recently. And, you know, my question that's always asked of me when I speak at a conference or I run into people and they find out what I do for a living is, should I buy gold? And again, gold's not the be-all, end-all from an investment perspective. There are times that you want to be more aggressively invested in gold and times when you want to be lighten up, much the same as you would with a stock or a bond. But when I looked at the group of investors that have asked me that question, they sort of fall into three primary categories. I've added a fourth category, and I'll just quickly go over them. And you know, the first category is the one you're referring to now, where people believe that the financial system is going to collapse. Fiat currencies are not going to be used anymore. They want to buy gold. They have no trust in the system, so they don't allow the dealer to hold the gold for them. They don't trust ETFs. They don't trust mutual funds. They don't trust anything that's regulated. They want to take delivery of the gold to their home, and what they do with it after that is anyone's guess. I can give you a story back from the late 70s when I ran into an investor with that psychology. About 3 years after he had bought some 50,000 ounces of silver and 1,000-ounce bars, he invited me to a party, and we were sitting out on his patio with a group of people, and he said, "How do you like my patio?" And I said, "It looks okay to me." And he said, "What do you think about the paver stones?" And I said, "Pretty good job, whoever did it for you." He said, "You're standing on 50,000 ounces of silver." He had taken the silver bars and he had turned them into paver stones, and then he had them painted, so there was absolutely no way you could tell they were silver bars.
Wow.
And obviously other people stick it under their bed. They have, wherever they feel comfortable holding their gold. The problem I have with the argument is that if you have a total collapse of the fiat currency system, the question is, what value does gold then have? Because if you're sitting there and you're struggling and you have sort of an apocalyptic event, you're going to go to your neighbor because you're likely going to be looking either for food or for some form of energy, whether it's gasoline or, a generator or whatever. And it's highly unlikely, in my perspective, that this neighbor will give you his food if you give him a 1 ounce gold bar. Because quite frankly, what is he going to do with the 1 ounce gold bar if the financial system has collapsed? I mean, where do you barter that gold from a value perspective, where it has tangible meaning to somebody that's looking for food or looking for gasoline for their car or a generator for their home? So I'm not convinced of the argument. I do believe, though, that individuals that have that belief don't trust the system, and holding gold physically at home is a viable option to them. Should we get another 2008 type of scenario, gold will certainly go higher. And in that context, they will have protected their assets to some extent by holding gold. The second group I call the conservative investor, and these are individuals that want to hold a portion of their gold in their portfolio as they use the word, we'll use the word that everyone uses, as insurance against any type of geopolitical event or financial event that could cause the balance of their portfolio to suffer. They want some hedge in their portfolio, so they buy gold. These investors are comfortable with ETFs. They're also comfortable with physical gold. They're also comfortable with allowing the dealer to hold their gold in segregated storage in case they want to liquidate, so they have liquidity. But all the analysts that sort of come out and just sort of parrot the concept, you have to hold 10% of your assets in gold, they don't complete the sentence. And you know, the sentence is that gold is an asset just the way a stock or a bond is an asset within your portfolio. And it's important that you recalibrate your portfolio, you know, whether you do it every 3 months, 6 months, or once a year. And in that context, gold being part of your portfolio needs to be recalibrated as well. So just to give you some simple math examples, if in 2008 you had bought gold at $800 an ounce, in 2011 it's sitting at $1,900 an ounce, I pretty much guarantee you that if you went into the trade with a 10% allocation, that your gold is probably now representing maybe 15, 18% of your portfolio. You need to liquidate that 5 or 8% to bring it back down to 10. Vice versa, had you got in 2011 at $1,925, and then in 2010, 2015, gold was down at $1,080. Your gold position probably wasn't 10% anymore. It was probably now 4%. So now you need to buy 6%. So if you recalibrate your gold holding, if you're of the mindset that it's an insurance position, you'll tend to add to your gold positions as the gold price drops and liquidate into strength, at the same time always having that 10% insurance position in your portfolio. The third group are traders. They have no loyalty. They could be, you know, bullish at 9 o'clock, bearish at 9:01. They're in the game strictly for capital gains. They tend to want to go into instruments that are tight in the sense of a spread. They don't want to overcome a significant spread before they're in a capital gain position. These individuals tend to be active in the futures market, options market, wherever they can get leverage. And the fourth group I throw in anecdotally, because it does take off a relatively good supply of physical material in the market on an annual basis. And I call these guys sort of the collectors. And, you know, they buy stuff that is issued by the Royal Canadian Mint, U.S. Mint, you know, where they come up with an animal coin or, a commemorative coin or something. And they just think it's cool. They like the design of an airplane, comes in a nice box. The premiums are horrendous. They're terrible investments. But people like to collect that stuff, give it to their grandkids or whatever. And that stuff, when you buy it, tends to come off the market and stay off the market for a long time until these people tend to die, and then their kids find it, and then they end up selling it on the secondary market to dealers for whatever they can get for it.
Right.
So those are some of the four groups that have been consistent right through 73 when gold first started trading freely.
I think that's a great breakdown, so I appreciate that. Peter, Savage Nation is ready for your difference-making tip. What do you have for them?
I recommend clients do is, again, this doesn't matter whether you're buying gold or you're buying equities, is you need to have a game plan going into it. You try to keep emotion out of your investment plans. Again, whether you buy gold or Apple stock or bonds, don't get hyped in by people. Do your homework, and I'm gonna put a plug in here for Kitco, anybody that knows me, I'm extremely transparent, and I'm not the kind of guy that sits there and hypes the company that I'm working for. But what I find unique to Kitco is that we have a Chinese wall between our media department and our trading operation. And on Kitco.com, we publish in the neighborhood of 20 to 30 analytic reports and commentaries every day. And they're not all bullish. Sometimes you'll have a day where a lot of them are all bearish. But what they do is And these are industry leaders, both in the mining side and also in the physical and the leveraged precious metals market. You can actually try to educate yourself as to why things are happening, why the markets are moving. So, you know, I think that's really important that you understand why you're buying gold, not because your neighbor thinks it's, you know, going to $10,000 an ounce or, you know, you need to understand why you're buying gold. And these, you know, these commentaries and these reports at least will give you the basis to understand why the market is moving, where it's likely to move. You can then look at that and then make an educated decision that if you want to get into the market, what is the best vehicle that suits your, first of all, your psychology, your risk parameters, and your ultimate goal as to why you would be buying gold in the first place. So that would be my advice.
Well, that is great stuff. That definitely gets a come on.
Come on.
So I appreciate that, Peter. And you mentioned Kitco.com, and you're producing 20 to 30 articles every day, or reports every day, and that's incredible. Where else can people find more about you and Kitco?
Well, that's our primary site. Generally, you know, depending on the market volatility, I post a commentary at least twice, sometimes three times a week. But the caveat being that this is oriented towards traders. So I give support resistance lines. I give my suggestions of where I think the price of gold is going to go during the day in very short term. It's not a long term you know, type of blog. It's just a quickie, about four or five sentences of what's happened overnight and where I think the support resistance lines are and where I think the market may go. You know, I can always be reached at Kitco at phug.kitco.com for anybody that has specific questions. Can't promise I'll get back same day, but I generally do get back within 48 hours. So that's how you can reach me. You know, the site is, the other thing that I would also mention to investors that are buying precious metals, especially investors that are holding the metals with the dealer, you know, check your dealer out. You know, it's very easy today to set up a precious metals company. I mean, you can set up a website in 20 minutes, and a lot of the big wholesale dealers will offer you consignment. So it's relatively easy to get into the business. It's relatively tough to make money in the business and to stay from a longevity perspective. So look at some of the dealers that you're dealing with, you know, see if they've gone through the ups and downs in a market. You know, a lot of the dealers that got in 2008, I mean, if you could chew gum and walk, you could make money because the market went straight up. See what kind, how many of those dealers are still around today after the market has come back 40 or 50%. I mean, Kitco's been around since 79. So it's important also to see, you know, the history of the dealer and the comfort level of a dealer, especially if you're going to be storing metals with them.
Excellent. I think that's great advice. Well, Savage Nation, if you enjoyed this as much as I did, show Peter your appreciation and share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Check out all the great stuff on Kitco.com and even shoot him an email. Thank you again, Peter.
It was my pleasure, George. Thank you.
And until next time, keep fighting the good fight because we are all in this together.
What's up, Savage Nation? Please support the show by subscribing, leave us a review, and definitely feel free to share us with somebody you think would like it.
Come on!